creating great food, delivering amazing guest experiences, giving your employees a safe working environment. The last thing you want to do is worry about your technology. NCR can help you run your restaurants from end to end, giving you one number to call whether it's our technology or not. It's your restaurant, made simple. Visit ncr.com to learn how.
Why did some restaurant chain sales thrive so quickly after the pandemic? Hello, I'm Jonathan Mays, Editor-in-Chief of Restaurant Business, and in this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, I speak with Lauren Davis, who leads corporate and product strategy at the financial data firm Factius. Factius has been reporting sales using debit card information since the start of the pandemic, and its weekly reports have provided some key insights into the direction of retail and restaurant spending. Lauren provides some interesting points on what sectors and even chains have performed well and those that haven't. We talk about the factors that influence success and failure. We also get into spending shifts since this pandemic as consumers have changed, and how much that spending shift could be permanent. Please have a listen. Okay, I'm here with Lauren Davis. Lauren, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jonathan.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about Factius and what you guys do and where you get your numbers from.
Yeah, absolutely. So Factius has been around for about 10 years now. We work primarily with banks and financial institutions to safely and securely monetize the valuable transaction data they have. So we've developed a proprietary application called Mimic. It synthesizes real transaction data such that it can't be used to re-identify individuals. Because the markets that we serve are really interested in high-level trends analysis that you use transaction-level detail for. So we've been doing this now for, as I mentioned, over 10 years. We work with the largest financial institutions in the country. And we represent a panel of consumer spending data that's probably the largest in the market, roughly over 18 million cards. Mm-hmm. So what I'm going to be talking about today is sourced from that data, and we're really excited to share what we've learned.
Yeah, super. So I guess the first question is, what have you seen from the, just specifically about the restaurant industry, what have you seen and what sectors have really stood out since the pandemic began?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, obviously, overall spending in the restaurant industry, you know, was quite hard hit with lockdowns, but post, you know, lockdown restrictions, you see some industries doing particularly well. So you can look at, you know, QSR is doing quite well. Some of the fast casual concepts doing well. One of the ones that, you know, everyone's talked a lot about is even during the pandemic and the lockdowns, pizza was doing particularly well, right? You know, they already had business models that align with people calling in or ordering online and having it delivered, and those particular businesses did well. So post pandemic, you know, we still see a lot of struggles in what we would kind of term, you know, sit down restaurants. You know, geography plays a factor in that. Mm-hmm. But for the majority of the names that we track, we're seeing, you know, most people at this point is probably, you know, growing their businesses. In the QSR, coffee, fast casual, they're doing pretty well for themselves mm-hmm. overall.
Right.
And we can go into more detail, but yeah, that's what it looks like from our point of view at this point.
Did you see sort of like in the numbers, did you see like a kind of order or priority? I mean, it's my sense really that like pizza did well early on, still doing well, but pizza was like the first to really recover. Roughly followed by fast food restaurants with drive-throughs and fast casuals, and coffee places, and then sort of, you know, coming up the rear, we have casual dining and then everybody else. I mean, is that sort of what you've seen?
Yeah, I would note, I think coffee, you know, it was a little bit longer of a trajectory and recovery than, mm-hmm. you know, fast following QSR. It looks closer to, you know, casual dining insofar as that swoop of the curve. Obviously they were doing better than sit down restaurants, but I think you see a shift in the way that people are interacting with these businesses. So if I think of the coffee chains of the world, you know, the fact that most people still aren't necessarily going into the office for work, that's going to impact their business, right? So where you're seeing the spend occurring in terms of part of day is has changed. And I think that's had an impact on their business as well.
What things are you seeing in terms of time of day spending? Do you have that?
Yeah, absolutely. So let me just kind of quickly describe what we did. Mm-hmm. What we did is we took the time of the transaction. We really just broke it into kind of four basic parts of the day. So breakfast, lunch, between meals, and then dinner. Fairly simple. And what you see here is comparing, the portion of spend at some of these places compared to the previous year. And we're really looking at the past 3 months. You see a dramatic change insofar as the portion of spend that was in breakfast declining, let's say between 3 to 5%. And you're seeing the pickup, depending on the brand, coming in, you know, either at the lunch hour or between meals. And so those are the types of shifts that we're seeing from, you know, early morning kind of commuting to now more like a lunchtime in between time. I need mm-hmm. a pick me up. That's where consumers are really going and spending their dollars now.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen any pick back up in the breakfast day part lately? Has that recovered at all?
A little bit, but I mean, it's really on the margins, you know, like maybe 1% difference compared to the previous months. I haven't looked at October yet, but I would anticipate similar in October. You might see some more slight improvement. But overall, I think there's just been this really big change in how people are interacting with the businesses and that affecting the business. And if you think of, you know, what types of items might have been available for purchase, you know, that's going to affect both the revenue and the earnings mix there, which to mm-hmm. be honest, goes a little bit beyond my knowledge.
Yeah. My sense of it is that element is going to take probably the longest runway. You could make an argument actually that people will return to restaurants before they'll return to work. And, right. I think a lot of this change in commuting pattern to a certain extent, not all of it, but a lot of it is permanent. And if that happens, I mean, that definitely seems to influence the sales for, you know, certainly coffee and breakfast, for sure, but also like just urban concepts. I mean, we've had, some challenges with some urban concepts in particular. That roughly parallel what we've seen in casual dining. So to me, I mean, it would seem like it would take the longest runway of any improvement down the line.
Agreed. I think you hit it right on the head there.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you seen any, like within the fast food sector, anybody doing better than you think than others doing worse? Anybody really outperforming just in terms of individual like sort of subsectors?
Yeah. So if you look at, for example, you know, some of the businesses that we track, you know, a lot of the common names, you know, one that we see a lot of success right now is Wingstop. Wingstop has had just really great outperformance in terms of overall sales. But what's really interesting, and this is where our data is so, you know, fascinating to look at, is because we can start breaking it down in terms of, you know, the constituent parts. So like ticket sizes, traffic, sources. And what we're seeing is, you know, this really, and Wingstop has reported this in part, I think their Q2 earnings call, about, you know, nearly 60% of their spending is coming through online sources. And we're seeing a continuation of that, a little softening towards the end of September. But overall, you're still seeing this really significant shift into the online channel. And you see that, you know, it's head and shoulders above, you know, their competition. So if you're looking at some of the other chicken concepts like Chick-fil-A, certainly, you know, compared to like a Popeyes or a KFC, you know, Wingstop is just categorically different, you know, just mm-hmm. in how they're able to drive so much of their business through the online channel.
Yeah. Wingstop is one of those brands that, I mean, it didn't come out of nowhere, right? But I mean, the their outperformance during a pandemic probably was one of the bigger surprises. You could have expected, you know, Papa John's and Domino's and these other pizza chains, you know, really that had their own drivers and a very well-established technology business that they sort of run themselves. And Wingstop does a lot of the same things. In fact, I always say that they're a pizza chain that sells chicken wings, that they're more like a pizza chain really than certainly the chicken chain that they get lumped in with. But still, I mean, it's still been somewhat surprising. And then now everybody's sort of jumping on board the chicken wing bandwagon with their virtual chicken wing brands. But that's been one of the bigger surprises to me of the pandemic.
Yeah, I agreed. I think on the other little bit, kind of continuing down that same trend of looking at online, one of the ones that we look at is in the sandwich category in terms of like the Subways, the Potbellies, Jimmy John's, etc. You see again a pretty categorical difference between a brand like Jimmy John's holding, you know, a commanding lead in terms of online ordering compared to the other brands that, you know, they compete with. In fact, on our data, when we're looking at it, we actually see Subway, you know, as the laggard.
Really?
So overall, you know, you see this, you know, there's starting to be, it's kind of like when you look at, you know, like oil and water, and then you add like different, you know, density in a drink, you see these like distinct layers come out. And that's what we're starting to see in some of these, in these categories. Certain brands really are taking commanding leads and they're sticking with them. And it's a hard thing to come up against. I think you talked about, you know, Wingstop being more of a pizza chain that serves wings. I mean, look at the way that Domino's is able to turn technology into a competitive advantage, right? Like, and they've been able to use that over time. So it'll be interesting to see if this happens in the other industries and categories as well.
What's happened with, I mean, yeah, Domino's ability on this front has been and certainly other pizza chains as well, has been a massive competitive advantage. And in fact, I mean, frankly, if you like look at, and it's not completely, it's not like 100% true, but those chains, like you mentioned, you know, Jimmy John's versus Subway, for instance, and Jimmy John's had this well-established delivery and online ordering network going into the pandemic, whereas Subway was still playing catch up. And if you go into like, say, casual dining, for instance, any restaurant chain that did really well with, you know, takeout and delivery would seem to have been outperforming during the pandemic and is in far better shape right now. I mean, have you seen that?
So it seems like we do. I'm trying to think. I didn't do as much homework on the pizza side for this, to be honest, because it was it's been talked a lot about. I've actually prepped more on the the QSRs and sandwich. And so on the pizza side, I actually don't have a lot to comment on, unfortunately. I might have prepped for the wrong conversation.
That's quite okay. So let's talk a little bit about the sandwich. So you're saying that basically Jimmy John's has done really well during the pandemic?
They've done well in that particular view. I was looking at terms of where they're driving their sales online. I think overall they're pretty much in line with, you know, their comp group in terms of sales performance, you know, maybe slightly on the negative side, but on the margin. Mm-hmm. The one that really appears to be doing particularly well is Jersey Mike's in terms of compared to, you know, the Subways and the Potbellies in that group. And the Jersey Mike's, you know, one of the things that we really also look at is, you know, ticket sizes and ticket size growth. And overall there we see Jersey Mike's driving a higher, you know, average dollar per transaction and sustaining it compared to, you know, its competitors. Mm-hmm. Whether that, you know, alone accounts for it. I don't have the traffic data off the top of my head, but there's definitely an ability there. They're driving a premium in terms of transaction size, whether it's, you know, number of sandwiches ordered per, or is it just the overall cost per sandwich? I'm not sure, but they're definitely, you know, doing particularly well in compared to the others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, have you seen that? Like, I mean, the, you know, that, you know, the, that growth in average check, which we saw pretty substantially, since the beginning of the pandemic. I mean, has that just overall sustained itself? Or are you seeing some return to traffic a little bit?
Yeah, so overall, we're still seeing pretty elevated growth in average check. So in the order of, close to 20% for Jersey Mike's in general, year over year. There's still a lot of that lift is coming from ticket. Mm-hmm. We also see that in Potbelly, but Potbelly has, a little bit more room to grow. Right. And so where you don't see it is, like Jimmy John's. And I think that's true as, I guess I can share on my personal side here. This is not a recommendation or anything, but I was eating Jimmy John's for lunch and they haven't changed price on me in a while. And I don't think I've been changing my, my ordering habits. So the data, at least anecdotally, seems to coincide.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, they've kept their prices pretty, pretty stable for some time. Which is interesting. That they've managed to do that for some time. But I think that, if we talk about Jersey Mike's, I mean, Jersey Mike's, again, getting back to one of those issues is that they actually did a very good job going into the pandemic, I think, of really just jumping in with both feet onto delivery, I think, which has probably been, I'd imagine, been fairly big for them.
Right. Yeah. And that's something that, unfortunately, we do track the delivery agents. I didn't have it broken out for this particular mm-hmm. conversation. But yeah, absolutely. Those delivery agents, they could make or break a business at this point. I mean, I think I was reading for Chipotle that half of their, non-on-site sales were getting, through these delivery agents. The other is, I guess, they have, specific pickup spots. But yeah, it really makes a major difference having that integration. It can make or break it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, Chipotle is, probably done as much with delivery, I think, as any restaurant chain in the United States, in terms of, they've been very aggressive with their marketing campaigns and now they're kind of trying to shift a little bit away from that because the it's hurt them on the margin side. And right. Now they're like, wait a minute, paying a 15-20% premium on these delivery orders is hurting our margins. And now we have to shift it to the other direction. So it's sort of, it's kind of catching them a little bit, flat footed, I think. So, I guess now have you done any work on the chicken business, because that's been all the rage in the last few months?
So specifically the chicken business, we focused on Wingstop and then, mm-hmm. Their primary competitors. But if you're talking about specifically on the delivery side, I don't have that data right now. But yeah, that's something that would be probably pretty interesting to look at. Mm-hmm. I don't have it off the top of my head, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what sectors of the fast food business have you seen, have you seen really outperform generally?
Yeah. So I think other than the ones we've already mentioned, burgers are doing mm-hmm. fine, right? Like right. If you look at, the overall, sector, we're seeing, no surprise, you see something like a Sonic doing really well. Again, the business model was already set up for social distancing, and it's mm-hmm. continuing to do well with social distancing.
So they've continued to do well since the pandemic. They continue to do well even now.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because they weren't necessarily just doing it based on, ticket growth, which is where you saw a lot of the lift for McDonald's. It's probably more on the traffic side for Sonic. So people are going to that format specifically, it seems, because of the format, right? Whereas you see McDonald's, people are, essentially going there because it's McDonald's, but they're spending more at yeah. McDonald's. They're reacting to promotions, they're reacting to, whatever it is, the way that they're purchasing changing. The overall, the burger, part of the market has done quite well, we've seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were you tracking any data with McDonald's sort of in September? Because they had a really big month that month. and it tends to coincide with a couple of promotions that they ran.
Yeah, we did, and we saw, you know, pretty good growth in McDonald's in September. We definitely saw, you know, a pretty good tick up also in the average dollar per transaction that we were seeing there. You know, McDonald's is pretty steady, but, you know, they moved up probably a good, you know, 15 cents per transaction, which, you know, is no small potatoes for business of their size.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. So that you're saying that they had a higher average check in September because they were running a pretty significant promotion that month, roughly a $6 promotion that the Travis Scott meal was actually a discount. That's an $8 or $9 meal that they were selling for $6. People over that looked at a little bit, but that was a discount.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, probably smarter minds than mine will have to do the breakdown, but it would seem that if that's what brought people in, then they were potentially spending more on other items. But that's what we were seeing is a tick up in the average transaction.
Mm-hmm. So is any just speaking generally, what are the big things, sort of like the big takeaways that you've seen since the pandemic? What are the things that have really stood out that companies have, you know, that the winning companies have been most likely to do?
So we already hit on a lot of them, right? Mm-hmm. Like move online, the delivery agents matter. That obviously, as you pointed out, it's a double-edged sword. You got to be careful on the margin side. The other piece is there's been a change in behavior. We talked about it at the beginning with, you know, the coffee chains, mm-hmm. but if you think about it even on the positive side, you know, that's maybe on the negative side for coffee chains. But if you think on the Wingstop side, you know, the number of transactions people are having increased too, right? Like, so they might be ordering more often than they previously were. So mm-hmm. you start to see these behavioral changes. I think some of those tampered down, right? Like we used to see more transactions per week on, you know, some of like the burger joints because it seemed like people were clumping purchases. Now it seems like it's kind of reducing back to a little bit the mean. So you see those kinds of behavioral changes, but the businesses that are doing well, you know, A, their format worked, right? Social distancing, delivery, online channels really mattered. And then the difference is also, can you start moving your business to where your consumers are going? And you see this with Starbucks, whatever it was a couple of months ago, announcing that, you know, they're going to start having these smaller kiosk style place of vending. And so you start to see the ability to do that at scale. That's going to make a big difference for these businesses.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any sense as to who's been winning the sort of the coffee battle since this pandemic started? Has it led to any shifts in market share there?
I don't have a sense right now in terms of market share shift. So I'd have to probably punt on that. I mean, sure. Overall, you know, you see, you know, Dunkin' is performing on, you know, pretty much on average with the comp group, Starbucks a bit mm-hmm. under. Mm-hmm. you know, it's, I don't know. I don't have the market share numbers. We're looking just more right now at sales kind of overall, but it's also been just, you know, and a little bit on a meta note here, it's been challenging doing the analyses over the past few months because there's so many variables at play, mm-hmm. right? Like, geographic biases, the demographic biases. There's just a lot to unpack when you're trying to look at the data mm-hmm. To really get a through line.
Right. I mean, that's been a massive problem during the pandemic. And the thing is like, it's really difficult to legitimately compare what's going on now to what happened a year ago. And frankly, it's probably going to be very difficult to compare what's happening now with what will happen from a year from now. So we don't really know how the consumer is going to change. I mean, we assume that some of these things are going to be permanent. Some of these changes that consumers are making are going to be permanent, but we won't really know. And, right. It's hard for me to imagine long-term people not eating out at restaurants, but, you know, and then them always wanting to eat, you know, just stand and sit in line forever at a drive-thru to get some chicken fingers. I don't, And I love restaurants. I love chicken fingers. So, I mean, it's, we don't know. And it's really hard to get any sort of sense as to what's going to happen anyway. That's a little rant. But do we know in terms of like, are we still seeing some challenges overall in urban areas? I mean, are you, do you have that graphical geographic breakdown at all?
Yeah, I'm trying to think through what I've seen recently. It's not clear to me right now when I'm looking at it, mm-hmm. what the changes are. I mean, overall, you can imagine, you know, there's been traffic changes, right? So when you're doing that year over year analysis at the individual, like city level, it's hard because you know a lot of population is either staying outside the city or moved out of the city. It's very difficult to do that analysis and get a clear picture.
Right. So I guess, so one of the things that we've seen, so like looking at the data that you've had on a week to week level, you've seen some pretty substantial growth in the fast food business, some real substantial growth. One of the questions that I have, is that a sign as much of part of, because you're using credit card data, right? I mean, is that part of it because a lot more people are using credit cards now than did a year ago? Is that one of those factors?
It's actually debit cards, and it's the shift to debit cards. Yeah. So if you look at credit card spending's actually dipped significantly because it's typically higher income families with more disposable income. They pulled back the most because they could. Whereas what you see on the debit card side is you have two effects. One is the effect of stimulus programs and other kind of economic support. Mm-hmm. And you also have the move from cash to debit, right? So a lot of these lower middle income families, you know, aren't using cash as much, they're using debit more. So a part of that is what you're seeing is some of that can be the effect of what previously was unseen, you know, cash payments. Mm-hmm. And this is going to vary depending on the business. Now is going to start showing up in that debit side. But yeah, I think overall, yeah, I would definitely say when you think about the fact that we're showing, you know, year over year growth overall for the fast food segment, you know, it's important to consider the biases of the data, right? The mm-hmm. debit focus is going to matter. The other piece that's going to matter is we skew younger, right? We have very, very good pulse on millennials, Gen X, and they spend differently. They're going to be the ones who eat at fast food restaurants more than, like, for example, the baby boomer generation. So all of those things are going to be things that you have to consider as you, you know, really hone in on a number.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, so essentially what can determine from the number is that younger consumers are definitely eating out, especially at fast food, more often than they did. And the thing is, they're getting a lot of, I mean, you mentioned the stimulus, and I think that's a reason why the industry has been pulled up. And looking at other elements of your data, nobody's spending money. Nobody's going out to movies. I mean, they're down, what, 85 to 90% on a weekly basis still. They're not going to amusement parks. They're not, traveling and doing all their stuff. They're basically going out to eat at restaurants and buying stuff.
That's right. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it was a bit, I think, frankly, surprising how much strength we've seen in overall consumer spending in the past few months. We, mm-hmm. you know, didn't expect it to last as
long as it has. And,
but I think we're all probably a bit thankful for it.
Yeah. I thought it was going to start dropping in July. That's been a big surprise to me is how long it's lasted. And the only explanation I can think of is that they didn't spend all their money, and B, they don't have anything else to spend their money on. And then the other thing is, I think people just need restaurants. But you know, I mean, retail sales are also up, so it's still, you know, I mean, they're spending here and there, and I don't know. The consumer spending data has been all over the place, and it's fascinating to look at.
It is. Yeah, it's like a rocking boat, and we're still, you know, finding footing.
Right. Super. On that note, that's been fantastic. I really appreciate you joining us this week on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan. Real pleasure to be here.
Lastly, we would like to put in a plug for some other podcasts on restaurant business, including Buzzworthy Brands by Heather Lally, a podcast that looks at the trials and tribulations of the nation's emerging chains, and Menu Feed from Pat Kobe, which is about all things menu. Check out those podcasts wherever you find your podcasts. And then there is RB Daily, your daily dose of the day's most important news from the editors of Restaurant Business. Check us out on our homepage, www.restaurantbusinessonline.com, or on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere else. And that should do it for today's A Deeper Dive, which, as always, was edited by Kimberly Kazmarek, artwork by Nico Hines and Sarah Stewart. You can find this and other episodes of the podcast on our website at www.restaurantbusinessonline.com/article/deeper-dive. And you may also find them on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or all those other fancy little podcast places. I'm Jonathan Mays, your host and podcast producer and the editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business Magazine. Thank you for listening.
Creating great food, delivering amazing guest experiences, giving your employees a safe working environment. The last thing you want to do is worry about your technology. NCR can help you run your restaurants from end to end, giving you one number to call whether it's our technology or not. It's your restaurant, made simple. Visit ncr.com to learn how.